everybody, welcome to the Guys Learning Japanese podcast. How's it going, Nick?
Not too good, actually. I've got a blocked nose and I'm a bit sick.
Oh, well, I hope you feel better soon.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, has it been going on a long while?
About 3 or 4 days now.
Okay. Yeah. I'm all right, but anyway, let's get straight to the show. So, you being sick, I guess most people could probably assume what time of the year it is. It's winter. It's coming up towards the winter holidays. And some people, they're probably going back to their home country, or they may go on vacation. So they're going to be away from their study resources for a while. So for today's show, let's talk about studying on the go. So what you do or how you study when you're away from home or away from your resources.
Yeah, sure. That sounds great.
So as I just said, you're planning to go to Australia, back to your home country, for a little while over the winter break. So what are you planning to do?
Yeah, well, it's actually not going to be Australia's winter. It'll be Australia's summer. But yeah, I'm going to be going for about two and a bit weeks. And I've been, over the last few days, I've been sort of gearing up for that trip, just sort of thinking about what I can do personally to keep my Japanese study going. I think the major problem is that in transit, you know, on the plane, it's going to take a long time, and even possibly in the airports, I won't really have any access to Wi-Fi or internet of any kind. And so it's been trying to find offline resources that I can use. And I've gone back to this a few times before, but Anki is really, really good for that. I have an iPod, and I have Anki mobile, and it's a completely offline program. You actually only need to use the internet when you're syncing between the devices. But since I'm going to be using the same device over and over and over again for the whole 2 weeks, I'll never actually need an internet connection for the whole 2 weeks I'm away. So that's a really, really good program to use.
Yeah, I second that. I use it a lot too if I'm going on a trip, or if I'm in a place that doesn't have internet, or a place that may have really slow internet. I use it the same way. It's just really wonderful how you can use it online or offline.
And you have Anki Droid as well. Is that also offline?
Yes, it's basically the same as iOS. The interface is a little different, but the functionality is the same.
Right, mm-hmm. Okay. And I don't know about other dictionary programs, but on my iPod I use a dictionary program called Midori, which means green in Japanese. And it's a really, you know, comprehensive Japanese to English dictionary. And it's got a really good kanji input feature where you can use your fingers, your finger to write in kanji. And it's just it's really clean. Its example sentences also have furigana, which was a big selling point for me personally, because you can, you don't have to, in trying to understand the word, you don't have to suddenly go looking up, you know, half the words in the sentence because you don't know how to read them.
And you said the title was Midori. So
yeah,
would that be like written in alphabet or hiragana, kanji? Katakana.
Yeah, it's in Romaji, as in the alphabet.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's a great program. It's just very intuitive. Like if there's a kanji in a word which you don't recognize, you can just simply click. You know, in an example sentence, for example, you can just click on that kanji, and it will just show you the kanji, and it will show you the stroke order and everything. It's just a very intuitive program. Have you ever
This a paid app?
It was. I can't remember the price. I know that I've certainly got my money back from it, since it's really invaluable when you're on a plane or something like that and you don't have the internet, and you can even look up kanji, which, you know, for instance, if I'm reading one of the magazines that's on the plane, I can actually just sort of have the magazine on my lap and then just have the iPod on the magazine and then just sort of be looking up kanji as I'm going that way.
And, that's pretty nice.
Yeah, it's cool. It's cool. It's a cool resource. Have you do you have any sort of Japanese dictionaries that you can recommend?
Currently I'm using Imiwa. Yeah, it sounds pretty stupid, huh? it used to be called Kotoba. It's a iOS Japanese to English, English to Japanese dictionary. It's pretty good. Good functionality, very you know, basic, I guess you could say. I don't really have any complaints about it other than the title, the current title. But yeah, I don't use it that much anymore. I used to use it a lot, I guess, when I was studying Japanese more back in the day. But I don't really use it as much now. Now the main thing that I use is just my browser. Like, I won't bother checking the meaning of a word on my mobile device. Like, I'll just usually wait, or I may write it down and then check it later. So I don't really use any mobile dictionaries anymore.
Well, if you're on a Japanese flight, you could probably just ask the person next to you as well.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. For me, some other resources that I'm definitely considering taking with me is, I haven't quite decided if I'm going to take the DS yet. I have a DS, which is, if you don't already know it, DS is region-free. So
wonderful.
Yeah, it's I wish everything was region-free, but as far as I know, as far as in the console world, I know that a DS is region-free, and I know that a PS3 is also region-free. I'm not so sure about Xbox 360 or Wii or any of those sorts of consoles. Do you know more information about that?
PlayStation 2 and the first generation PlayStation, they're not region free. Like, you're restricted to your region.
Yeah. And so anyway, so as well as, you know, DS with my Japanese games on the DS, I'm also considering taking just books. I mean, they're kind of heavy, but if you had a Kindle, there's a lot of Japanese books on you know, Kindle version of Japanese books that you can get, which is something I haven't really got into yet. But
maybe you can just use the Kindle app on your iOS device.
Oh, that's a good idea. I never considered that. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, that's the best way to go.
Yeah, that's a great idea. The so since I don't have it though, I'm just at the moment considering just taking over a book with me, and it's much the same thing as what I described with the magazine, where I can just have the book in front of me, and if there's any words I don't know, I just sort of have Midori opened up, and I can just write in any kanji or write in any words that I don't understand the meaning to. Midori is also really great because it does this thing where, for instance, if you write the word, say you don't quite know the form, like whether the verb that you're writing in is in like its tet form, or if it's in its volitional form, or if it's in its potential form, or any of those sorts of forms, you can normally write it in its actual kind of various forms, and it will still show the correct verb. Yeah, I mean that's. It sounds a bit... let me just give you an example to sort of explain what I mean. So, for example, if you don't know the word ikitai, for example, you don't know that it's actually in the tai form, as in the, you know, a want-to form. So you could just, in Midori, you can type in ikitai, and then it will sort of come up as iku. And you're like, oh, okay, it's just iku. I see. And so it will actually sort of, it's sort of smart. It will go, oh, well, of course, you're just referring to iku, you know? Mm-hmm. And so if that makes sense, I think that's a...
Yeah, it just understands it from the context.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's a really, really useful in that way.
Sorry to go back to the DS. I was wondering, you kind of left me with a few questions there. You said you play games. Are you playing like Japanese study games, like games like the Kanken or the calligraphy games, or like the Kokugo Mondai games, or are you just playing like regular Japanese games like Mario Kart or Zelda or something like that.
Yeah, I'm just playing regular games like Zelda and things. I've considered playing those games, and the other types of games, the sort of learning-based games, and I actually do have a couple of them, but they're just torture, especially when you're holding a handheld console. For some reason, I just associate DSs with fun and engagement and everything, not with hardcore study. And so I've sat down and tried to, you know, study kanji and stuff using one of these games. But, and, you know, I'm not saying that they're bad resources. I'm sure that, you know, there's a lot of, people can get a lot of use out of them, but I just can't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Have you ever used any resources like that, like games that, which are specifically made for learning?
Yeah, whenever I go back to Canada, I usually go back in the summer, and usually for a kind of extended amount of time, might be a few weeks or so. I always bring my DS, and I bring a game, I think it's called Bimoji Training. And basically you're just practicing characters, and it's teaching you how to write them really nicely. But I tend to bring my DS, but I never use it, actually. It just ends up being luggage. Like, and it's the same with novels. Like, I usually don't bring a novel, but usually when I'm waiting in the airport, I might buy a few Japanese novels and then just put them in my backpack and never open them. It's a really bad habit, actually. I tend, when I go on vacation, I tend not to study that much. Like, I don't actually use resources very much when I'm on vacation.
So what do you do instead?
The main thing I do is I make sure that I have some kind of exposure to the language, whether it be me talking to myself in my head, like I may be... I don't do it out loud, because that'll probably, you know, freak out some local Canadians. But I just talk to myself in my head. I may, you know, create a story or tell myself a story in my head or ask myself questions about what happened the previous day or what my plans are for tomorrow. Or I may try and summarize a TV show that I watched in English. I may try to summarize it in Japanese. And if I'm at a place like my mom's where we have a high-speed internet connection, like I may watch, you know, some Japanese TV shows online. I may do that. I usually don't, but yeah, when I'm away from Japan or when I'm away from my resources or my normal environment, I usually don't study much, even if I do bring my resources. I usually intend to, but I usually end up not studying.
Yeah. Yeah. What about listening? Do you have anything like episodes of TV shows or anything like that on your smartphone or on something like a smartphone?
Actually, not TV shows, but I had quite a few podcasts on my iPhone the last time I went to Canada, and I was doing a lot of yard work every day. I was doing about like 6, 7, 8 hours of yard work a day, just kind of landscaping a hill, and like that whole time I was just listening to Japanese podcasts while I was doing that landscaping work, and it was pretty nice, you know.
Yeah, that's great exposure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about you?
Yeah, I have a really good program to introduce. For those who don't know, the program is called Subs 2 SRS. It's SUBS, Subs 2, as in numeral 2, SRS. It's being something like Anki, for example. And it's the program's prime function is that you insert subs files, such as SRT files or some other types of type of subtitle file, and then you can put in video if you want and whatnot, and you basically push go, and what it does is it will extract the video and it will extract the audio from a from an episode of a TV show, and then it will sort of sync up the subtitles, and so you can and then you can put those into Anki as Anki cards. That's its prime function. And I won't go into too much depth of describing that, but that is undoubtedly, I use that, I have a whole deck devoted to that practice, and I really, really enjoy doing that with different TV shows, especially with episodes of TV shows that I find particularly difficult, I like to do that with. But what I'd like to tell you about today is another function of this amazing program, which is offered free. If you just type in subs to SRS into Google, I'm sure you'd be able to find it. But anyway, the other area is called extract audio from media. And what you do, if you just click on that in the main menu, it will come up with a sort of a window where you can just basically locate a media file, such as an episode of a TV show or a movie that you've maybe downloaded online. Could be, for instance, an anime, could be anything really, and then you just put that in, you select an output a place for it, and then you can do all sorts of other things. You can choose its bitrate if you're interested in that sort of thing, if you really want it to be high quality or if you just don't care about its quality. And then it also has another beautiful feature, which is you can choose whether it will extract the entire audio as a single clip, or if it will sort of break the audio track into multiple clips of a time that you specify.
So, it does that itself, or you?
Yeah,
you said you have to specify it. So how, like, 10-second clips or something?
You could put it in 10 seconds if you were really, really interested in doing that. But I normally do it as about 4 or 5 minutes. And so what I do, for example, is say I've taken. A TV show that I was watching recently was, say, Uchiyo Kyoudai. Say I've taken episodes 1 through episode 10 of Uchiyo Kyoudai, and I've gone through this process, and I've broken up each episode into 5-minute chunks. And so each episode is about 25 minutes or so. And so it's obviously going to be 5 chunks per episode. And then I will put those in a big list, or I'll enqueue them all in a big list into Winamp, or in the case of going on holiday, I'll import all of those onto my iPod, and then I can just open them up in the music app on an iPod, and just click shuffle, and it will basically shuffle in 5-minute blocks between those different audio clips. So, for instance, the first time it'll play, it might play, you know, halfway in episode 1, and then it will jump to episode 9, and then it will jump back to episode 7, maybe the ending of episode 7. And so it's a really good way to, it's especially good if you've already seen the episodes, of course, otherwise it doesn't make much sense. But if you've already seen the episodes, it's a good way of jogging your memory and sort of revising in these sort of little 5-minute bite-sized pieces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds good. Like, if you're someone that doesn't like studying or, like, you know, cracking a textbook, I think this is probably a very lucky situation for you, because you're going to benefit a lot from studying like this, probably a lot more than studying with a textbook.
Yeah, well, we've talked in the past on a previous podcast about the importance of listening, and this is really great, because I think one of the reasons why I personally like them being 5 minutes or even shorter is that if I'm having a bit of a hard time understanding, getting a sense of the context, getting a sense of what's happening in the story, it's fairly painless. You only have to wait for another 4 minutes or another 5 minutes, and then it's going to change episode and anyway, and then you can try all over again, sort of thing. It's not really like listening to each episode seems to be like a task, but listening to 5 minutes or 4 minutes of an episode doesn't. It seems definitely doable for some reason. It just makes some sort of conscious difference to me.
How long have you been studying like this?
I've been maybe about a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's been really good. I've got I've got probably 10 to 15 movies and at least 80 or so episodes of different TV shows, including anime and including dramas and things like that. I've found it to be really good. Of course, there's particular TV shows where they have a lot of action, or they might have a lot of silences where, you know, that it's not so useful for those moments. But but if it's a TV show where there's a lot of talking, such as dramas, a lot of Japanese dramas have a lot of talking, it's really, really good for that purpose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds like a great tool.
Yeah, it is. Another tool that I use is converting video. I just use a simple video conversion program, and you can just convert videos that you have on your computer down to a file that is compatible with an iPod, and you can just make them fairly sort of small, small as in the size of the file, and then you can just import those onto your iPod and watch those while you're on a plane or whatever. I haven't done that as commonly because it requires you to sort of watch it. And normally when I'm on a plane, I'm sort of, especially after, you know, 6 hours or something, I start going a bit brain dead. So I don't really have the concentration to sort of actively be watching a show. There's also another issue, which is that I haven't been able to find a good way of embedding Japanese subtitles into a video file. If there's anybody,
yeah, they're not hard coded, right?
Yeah, that's right. They're not hard coded. So if there's anybody listening right now who knows a really simple way, I mean, if it's really complicated, maybe not. But if a really simple way of hard encoding say an SRT file or an ASSRS file into a video, then yeah, please email me, because I would genuinely love to know that, because yeah, one of the problems is you know, I'm sort of gone blind. I don't really have any English or any Japanese subtitles at all when I'm watching the TV show, and obviously I can still learn something, but it's not as enjoyable as if I could read it as I'm watching it.
Yeah.
And so how about you? Do you have any sort of tricks that you've learned along the way of how to study when you've been on holiday?
Well, it's actually kind of the opposite of that. I think actually taking a vacation from your study time is actually a good thing. Obviously, this is not going to be true for people who study an hour a week. You know, someone who might study, you know, on Saturday for an hour, they might review kanji. This kind of person taking a break away from their studies, it's not really going to make a difference. Probably going to just make it worse. But for someone who's always exposing themselves to Japanese and studying, you know, for a good amount every day, someone actually exhausting their mental resources, I think taking, you know, a 1 week break or so every now and then, it's going to be really beneficial for you, because it's something like digestion, like your body or your mind is going to digest the Japanese that you've accumulated over the time, and I think when you come back, you're going to feel more refreshed, and you're going to be more interested in maybe even the same content. It's just going to look new, and it's going to appear different. So I think taking time off every now and then is good if you're actually investing your time.
Do you think it would make any difference to comprehension? Do you think that you'll come back to Japanese smarter for having digested all of the sort of all of the stuff in the meantime?
Honestly, I don't know if it'll make a difference with comprehension, but I went to Canada for about a month a few years ago, and when I came back, I was talking with senior staff at the place where I work, and as soon as I started talking to him, this you know, this guy, he said, you know, oh, it seems like you've forgotten how to speak Japanese. I actually thought I was fine. Like, I didn't say anything strange. I felt like I was speaking naturally, but just his comment, and then he laughed to himself. So I'm not sure if he was serious or if he was joking, but... So I guess maybe it will affect your speaking ability if you're away for too long.
Yeah, you've just sent a shiver through through all of our fans. You know, never never go on holiday because your drop in Japanese will be noticeable.
Yeah, well, take this into consideration. Like, I went away for a month and I didn't hear any Japanese for literally a month. Like, I didn't watch anything, and, I just had no exposure to Japanese. I think I may have checked my Twitter feed a few times during that 1 month, and there may have been, you know, some Japanese tweets, but other than that, nothing. So it may affect your fluency if you're away from the language for too long. Though I think that may even happen, like, with you with English. Like, if you don't hear, as a native English speaker, if you don't hear English for a month and you don't use it for a month, you're probably going to sound pretty stupid, you know, after that amount of time.
It's like when you've had say it's during exam period or something like that at school, and you spend a lot of time inside just studying and just writing essays and studying for exams, and then when you sort of, it might be almost a whole week or 5 days or whatever it might be that you haven't really talked to anybody at all. Have you noticed that sometimes after you do that, you go outside and you talk to someone and it's like you're sort of rusty and you need to sort of like re-pick up the skill of how to listen properly and how to talk to them. You're just so dazed and confused from all the studying and everything and from the lack of contact.
Yeah. So I guess it's pretty natural then.
Yeah. Yeah. And, like you're a guy that's pretty interested in sort of health and fitness and stuff. Is there any similarities here between, like, say, the world of fitness? Is it a good idea, for instance, when working out, you know, that after a certain amount of weeks of working out to take time off for a week or 2 weeks or something like that?
I think there are a lot of similarities between language learning and sports, or like physical fitness. I think you need to rest. Like, I guess it's a little different with sports and physical fitness. Like, I think rest or adequate recovery is much more important because it could lead to like a buildup of cortisol or stress hormone, and that's just gonna make everything worse for you. I think with a language, though, it's not as necessary, but it definitely will be beneficial when you come back, because it's more of a psychological thing. You're just going to feel a lot fresher when you come back, as long as it's not too long. Like, let's say it's, you know, a couple days to a week or so. I think if you're going over a week or 2 weeks, maybe it's too long, and you've kind of past the peak.
Yeah, and it might be a good time too. The break might be a good time for your brain to sort of figure out new methods, or to figure out a new idea. Maybe I should sort of be changing my Anki cards to be a bit more like this, or just trying out some sort of new idea.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Because when you're sort of day in, day out doing the same thing, it's kind of hard to think more objectively about what you're doing and how you could possibly change it.
Mm-hmm. So I think I've given all my recommendations for studying on the go or when you're away from your resources. Do you have anything else to add?
No, not really. It just seems to be you either go my way and you just try and get, you know, try out that subs to SRS program and the extract audio from media sort of function within that program, and you know, get some DS games, get Anki, a couple of novels. Who doesn't want to read Heisig on the plane?
Yeah,
you could learn some kanji mnemonics, or you know, or even using midori like that with magazines or something like that. Or you could probably go more like you know, more like your route, Derek, and just don't do much, and when you come back to Japanese, maybe you'll feel refreshed and better than ever.
Yeah, yeah. So let us know what you guys think. If you guys have any special tips for studying on the go or when you're away from your resources, it'd be really nice to hear what you guys do.
Yeah.
All right, so let's end it there. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time on Guys Learning Japanese. Okay, thanks for listening to the Guys Learning Japanese podcast. Send your questions to glj@gmail.com. We'll answer your questions on the show.